This is All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery, from coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235, and let's talk about wine. Again, the phone number to call is 646-727-3235. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right, we're back.
Yeah, thank you, my people.
Thank you for listening. No, we left you for a minute there. We were talking, and so we left you for a minute there. Actually, a minute 19 seconds. But thank you, bus people, for cheering and all that good stuff. And we're back. We missed you last week, and I'm telling Mike the story of why we missed you last week. So the rotting lawnmower at work, So I changed the tire. The tire was flat. Cotter pin, what a pain. I got the tire changed, and I parked it. Then I went out last Thursday morning, and I was going to do some mowing because we have a festival Saturday, last Saturday. So I went out there, and I looked down, and the oil puddle was a little bit bigger. And so I sat on the lawnmower, and it was in the room. I sat on the lawnmower, and I start the lawnmower because I'm going to pull it out of the room back there. And I start the lawnmower, and I go, no, and I turn it back off, and I said, I better check this oil because, you know, that puddle's getting too big. Well, I look underneath it, and there is oil everywhere.
Everywhere. Oh, wow.
It was oil on the mow deck. It was oil up underneath on the tires. It threw it all over the floor. It was everywhere. And I'm going, oh, my. So I look under, and I don't see anything that, you know, was wrong that I could see. So I went in and I called Sears, and it's a Sears lawnmower. I have a warranty on it, which I'm glad I keep extending that. And they said he can come out this afternoon. I'm going, hey, all right, because you see, last time I called, it was like a week before he got out there.
Yeah.
I said, great, because I have a festival Saturday. So he gets out there. He gets out there about 5 o'clock, and he pulls the lawnmower out, and he starts looking at it, and he says, you blew a gasket. And he said, the main seal on the engine has a leak. Mm. And he said, what happened was it leaked onto the pulley. And when you started the motor, that pulley started to turn, sprayed oil everywhere. And that's what caused it to be everywhere. And so he said, let me do what I can now. He says, I don't have the gas. I'm going to have to order it for you. So he didn't, you know, he did a whole bunch of stuff. He took the motor off and he did all sorts of stuff. And everything he could do, he did then. And so I didn't get out of there until late because of all that. And after I finished. So I didn't get to mow or anything. So I thought I was going to be, you know, mowing and everything, but I didn't get a chance to mow. Well, the festival was Saturday and all the vendors showed up. We had like 9-10 vendors that showed up, and the musician called me and he says, I'm a little afraid of the rain with all my equipment. And I said, I understand. So he didn't show up. There was a quick storm that went through and the vendors just, you know, put everything, covered up everything, stayed. And then a bigger one they saw on radar, which is amazing now because vendors sit out there and look at their phones on radar and decide what they're going to do. So they all said, there's a storm coming. So they all pack up, and boy, this storm broke loose, and it rained. I went out and checked the rain gauge there. I went out there 3/4 of an inch of rain came down.
Wow.
Yeah, Saturday. Between the first little one and the bigger one, 3/4 of an inch of rain. And, oh, my gosh, you know, so the vendors left. But we still had lots of people. I mean, the people were coming in, and people were bringing their dogs. We are dog-friendly. We're pet-friendly. And the people were bringing their dogs, and the newspaper picked up and said dogs, you know, pet-friendly. And so people must have saw that, because we had more dogs in there at one time than we've had since the Pet Fest. I mean, it's just like there must have been a dozen dogs in there, you know. And the only ones that were barking was the little bitty small dog, you know, the ones that wanted to show that they were big and tough. And so those were the only ones that were barking. The big dogs were just sort of like, yeah, okay. But it was a pretty decent festival after everything's said and done. And I didn't get anything mowed. And so yesterday he was scheduled to come out and put everything back on, everything back together. Well, he called yesterday and says, schedule's been rearranged. I'll be out there tomorrow. So he came out today and he called me and I met him there. He got everything hooked up and all that. I did a little bit of mowing today, but I was planning on doing everything tomorrow anyway, so I'll mow tomorrow just because it's so high, it needs to be mowed. Sunshine, rain, we're in Florida, every road, you know. It's been an adventure, to say the least. So we got everything done, everything. I did some mowing and the thing's working fine and all that. And he even cleaned up a lot of the oil that was on the floor back in the back room. I told him, you know, above and beyond, but, you know, good for him. He did a nice job cleaning. So
very good.
That's
way to go.
That's
good service right there. That's they can come out, especially the same day, especially when you call them and they can come out the same day and take care of you like that. You know, that says a lot right there. I mean, because a lot of places, they can't do that anymore. We'll get to you.
Yeah, we'll be out there sometime soon. You know,
the winery is nowhere near that I know of or that I've seen.
No,
it isn't. Sears.
It is. In fact, nobody's near Sears anymore because they're closing them all down. You know, but it's nowhere near. He was telling me though. He said his area covers from Brooksville all the way down to Sarasota. He said it's just. Swamped with it. Yeah, it's unbelievable. He said they've laid off people and all that. They got three people handling everything from Brooksville to Sarasota over to the other side of Lakeland and up to Kissimmee. That's a whole three people handling all that. So, yeah, it is a big area. And, you know, he said they're swamped. And I said, well, you got here fast. And he said, yeah. He said, you're my last one of the day, and he said it worked out well for me. It's working. I did a little bit of mowing today. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time today because I had this tonight. I didn't want to cancel 2 weeks in a row. So, but if you tuned in last week, sorry we missed you, but we're back doing this again.
Here we are. And you have topics for tonight?
I have a few things to talk about, you know, different stuff to throw out at you. Mike's sick, by the way. If you hear him having sniffles and coughs and stuff like that, because he ill. As a result of this is international visitors that he gets to.
It could be domestic ones too. I have no idea.
It could be. Yeah.
You never know where they come from these days.
I'm surprised I'm not more sick than I am. I've had people from, Ohio, Illinois, New York, Wisconsin. I have quite a few people from Wisconsin. I don't know. There's been about 10 people from Wisconsin over the last couple of weeks. I don't know. And then, a bunch of other states. Oregon, somebody came in from Oregon. I get people from all over the country here. Speaking of all over the country, I just noticed on the news, and that's what I was checking on before we got on the air. I'm sorry, everybody, but we haven't had a chance to talk, so I got to, you know. But,
please stand by.
Yes, please stand by. Kansas City is getting some serious floods. And I'm from Kansas City. I'm going, whoa. So I looked it up, and there's this little creek there, Indian Creek it's called, that's about the size of a normal street that is flooding areas of Kansas City. So they got 7 inches of rain in like 24 hours. And it caused, yeah, a lot of rain there. So it caused some serious flooding. And the reason I'm concerned, obviously, I'm from Kansas City. I was looking up some videos and some of the areas they were showing. I remember driving down those roads and stuff. So well, we are back. As always, let me tell you different things you can toast to this coming week. We always like to let you know what's going on. This is July. I hope you all had yourself a good National Hot Dog Day. When was that, last Sunday? Yeah, I think so. Last Sunday, National Hot Dog Day. They were announcing it on news and everything, National Hot Dog Day. Here it is. National Hot Dog Day was last Sunday. So, hope you all had hot dogs. Today is actually National Chili Dog Day. So, that's a good one to celebrate today, National Chili Dog Day. You can always find a wine that matches well with chili dogs, I'm sure. And then tomorrow is National Hamburger Day. So, we got ourselves something old. And then coming up Saturday, National Chicken Wing Day. Some good ones. If you're not into chicken wings, though, Saturday is also National Lasagna Day, which, you know, light red wine. Depends on how you're making the lasagna, but red wine. Sunday, National Cheesecake Day. And the strawberry port I have goes great with cheesecake. So stop by if you're in the area and get yourself a port before Sunday for National Cheesecake Day. Monday, the 31st, National Raspberry Cake Day. And also, if you're out, it's National Mutt Day, as in dogs. Go down to a local shelter, pick yourself up a mutt on Sunday, which most of them are. So that Monday, National Mutt Day. Tuesday, Homemade Ice Cream Day. I haven't had homemade ice cream in a long, long time. But Homemade Ice Cream Day. Wednesday, National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. And then Thursday, National Watermelon Day. So, got some interesting ones coming up here. Then Friday, International Beer Day. Also National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. But that's a week from tomorrow. So, got some interesting pairings of wine here. But we got some good ones, though. Tomorrow, Hamburger Day, Chicken Wing Day, and Lasagna Day Saturday. So that's coming up. Always good things to enjoy with wine. And always, you can have wine for any occasion. So you don't have to have a special day for it. Got some stuff to pass on to you. Over the past couple, 3 weeks, I've been getting some things in the magazines and stuff that I want to pass on. Plus a few other odds and ends and a thing that I think people are going to be upset about. But summer sipping. Wither Hills introduced a new 2016 vintage rosé. It's a rosé of Pinot Noir. That's what they're actually calling it. The wine offers aromas of rose petals, wild cherries, wild strawberries, fresh raspberries, and white peaches. Wild strawberries as opposed to domestic strawberries. Now, I don't think I've ever smelled a wild strawberry, so how would I know if it's the smell of wild strawberry or domestic? They said the palate is elegant, reminiscent of summer berries, with a creamy texture and length balanced with bright acidity. 12.5% alcohol by volume. It makes it a little bit dry. 750 milliliter bottles going for around $14. So, it is distributed by in select markets. It's from New Zealand, Wither Hills in Marlborough, New Zealand, 2016 Rosé of Pinot Noir. So check that out. This was in the paper here. I noticed that it's 17. It was in Tuesday the 11th paper. Boy, that was a couple of weeks ago. 1796 wine was found. It's a six-month restoration project at Liberty Hall Museum in Union, New Jersey, uncovered three cases of Madeira wine dating to 1796 and about 42 demijohns from the 1820s. The museum said the monetary value of the wine cannot be made public. Why not? The museum building was built in 1760 as a country home for New York lawyer William Livingston, New Jersey's first elected governor. They have a town, Livingston, New Jersey, a town right across from New York called Livingston. But don't know if we're going to hear any more about those or not. They're not going to disclose the price. I don't know if they're going to auction or if they're going to, what they're going to probably end up auctioning them to raise money for the museum. Okay, here we go. A couple of things. Beso del Sol Pink. Beso del Sol. B-E-S-O del Sol. It's Hollandale Beach, Florida. Distribution is national on this. Beso del Sol Inc. added a Beso del Sol Pink, a rosé sangria, to its portfolio of sangrias comprised of Tempranillo grapes. The wine also contains natural Spanish, orange, lemon, peach, and mango flavors, along with a touch of Spanish cinnamon, the company says. Spanish cinnamon. I wonder how that's different from any others. I don't know. Spanish cinnamon. At 8.5% alcohol by volume, Beso del Sol Pink contains 74 calories in each serving. So there you go, a low-calorie sangria. It is available nationwide in several formats, including a 3-liter bag in a box, which retails for $19.99, a 1.5-liter glass bottle, which has a suggested price of $12.99, and a 50-milliliter Tetra Pak. Those are small ones that retail at $4.99. So they don't have $7.50. That's odd that they don't come out with $7.50. But at $19.99 for a 3-liter of sangria sounds like a good deal. 2016 Australian Chardonnay and a 2016 California Chardonnay by Notable Wine Company out of Geyserville, California. Internet is notablewines.com. Oh, and the other one, Beso del Sol Sangria.com is the internet address for that one if you want to check. Excuse me. Distribution of the Chardonnays I just mentioned, select markets around the country. Notable Wine Company introduced a new duo of wines showcasing the Chardonnay varietal, the new 2016 Fruity and Crisp Australia Chardonnay is 13% alcohol, fruit forward, and offers tasty notes of citrus, melon, and peach. While Notable's 2015 Oak and Buttery California Chardonnay is a rich, full-bodied Chardonnay that is 13.5% alcohol by volume with prominent butter, oak, and vanilla flavors. Both varieties have a suggested retail price of $14.99. Good price. That's what I'm selling my Chardon for. These, just by the descriptions, I would guess that the Australian one is un-oaked, whereas the California one is oaked and has a second fermentation, a malolactic fermentation to get the butteriness. So a good way to compare a couple of Chardonnays, pick them both up if you get a chance. Notable, N-O-T-A-B-L-E, notablewines.com is the address. So check that out and see what's going on there. The Yolumba Yalumba, I guess it's pronounced Yalumba. The Cali, a wine from Yalumba, a fifth-generation wine company, family wine company of the Barossa, South Australia, unveiled packaging and brand identity from design specialist Domination. The design reflects the exclusivity and luxury nature of the Cali wine through the use of techniques such as foiling, heavy debossing of the family crest. The Cali is named after Chairman Robert Hill. Oh, well, thank you. My engineer just brought me my wine for the meal. The bottle highlights Fred's Cali's reputation as a horticulturalist, correspondent, and adventurer, recalling the company's long history. It's a nice presentation box. It's wrapped in, we got a Carmenere. Very nice. The tissue paper wrapped around the wine details the destinations and journeys of Fred's travels between 1893 and 1894, and it features the family crest, and it's a nice presentation box. It really is, you know, doesn't give a price or anything, but, you know, you might check that out. Yalumba, Yalumba, Yalumba wine, the Cali from Yalumba. It's probably on their website, but new packaging, new interesting packaging, new way to celebrate and all that, and tack a little bit of price onto it too, I'm sure. My engineer just brought me out my evening's wine, and it is Route 1. The original ungrafted Carmenere. This is out of Chile, which most Carmeneres are. This is from Colchuga Valley in Chile. It's a 2014 vintage. And it's got the classic, I mean, really, the classic Carmenere smells to it. It's coming out very nicely in the aromas. Let me sip. Very nice. It's got that hint of pepperiness that I find very appealing in the Carmenere. It says Route 1 Carmenere, complex red wine with flavors of ripe plum, blackberry, and spice. And Chile is a true rarity in the wine world. And it goes on and says something on the front of the label here, but it's just too awkward to read it, so I'm not going to. Route 1, you can find it almost everywhere in the country. I mean, the Root, R-O-O-T, 1, and the first ungrafted, the original ungrafted root of the Carmenere. Nice flavors, nice. I like Carmenere. I've always liked Carmeneres. They're always very good and interesting. So, Route 1. Speaking of packaging, let me just mention that packaging for the Yalumba wine. Packaging trend, I get a couple of packaging magazines and they're talking about the Powers wine. Powers wine wanted its product to stand out on the shelf and while presenting a high-end premium look. And they had concerns about bulging of the carton, which would affect the overall perceived value. So they used metallic inks on it, and the design shows a leaf in it. Now, Powers Wine is, I have no idea. I'm going to tell you where it's from, but I don't know because it doesn't say it in the article itself, but maybe it does on the box. Yes, Washington State. There you go. But it's says another challenge for the consumer desire to create efficiency and sustainability in packaging. And so by eliminating the glass bottle, they were able to create efficiency in transportation, storage, and manufacturing costs, which is one of the reasons you're starting to see more and more things coming in different sizes and different boxes and stuff like that because of, well, green. It says both packaging solutions result in 79% less greenhouse gas emission and use 91% less package materials than regular glass bottles, all at a lower cost point. So powers in a box. Look for that out there from Washington State. The Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon is what they're showing here, and I'm sure that they do come out with others. Also, Griffin Brand's bag-in-a-box of vodka is available on the shelves now, too. And again, cheaper costs and cheaper transportation and just more friendly, green-friendly. House wine. I don't know if you've seen these out there or not, but the wine company chose cans for their products. Guaranteed fresh, and it's a grab-and-go lifestyle of the active wine consumers, now they're saying. A 375-milliliter can. excuse me. Will also be available in the 750 bottle and the 3-liter box offering, but they do have it. It's house wine. They have an original red blend, they have a rosé, and they have a Chardonnay. But right now they're out there in 375-milliliter cans. 375 is... one-third of your 750, so, you know, it's a four-pack to give you over a bottle there. So that's, you know, I'm seeing more and more and more of different alternatives for wine out there. It's just, I don't know why we're not seeing more on the shelf. Maybe it is some areas, but I'm not seeing more on the shelf. And wine packaging, a little article here also out of Packaging Magazine says, could wine be the new craft beer? Bonfire wine packages contain the equivalent of 2 bottles of wine and features a low carbon footprint pouch with a handle at the top, ergonomic handle and caps. So you can just, you know, tap it out. But 2 bottles of wine in it, Bonfire, they... offers a Cabernet Sauvignon, an Ember, what they call an Ember, which, and hang on for a second, let me see if I can't read this, a red blend, an Ignite, which is a white blend, and Pinot Grigio. So, interesting little things, but again, a different concept, a different approach to packaging. It's just constantly seeing the changes out there and what the different things, trying to save costs, trying to save the green footprint that they're trying to put out there, trying to make it better and easier. Like flip-flop wines, or they have their can and it continues to be very popular. The variety of different ones of those. I've seen those around quite a bit. But these are all just different styles. And with the inside of it being protected, with the ability to not have to worry about the insides affecting the flavors and tastes of the wines, there's absolutely no reason that they shouldn't be doing that, shouldn't be coming out with different types of easier to handle, lighter weight wine containers. And then that lighter weight is just so important. A case of wine, I pick up a case of wine to move it, is 39 pounds, give or take, you know, ounces, but 39 pounds. 39 pounds for a case of filled wine. Now, when you start going to these other closures, you start going to these other things, that starts dropping that into half of that. So much easier to carry around a 19-pound container than it is to carry around a 39-pound container. And the shipping costs, as you can imagine, are significantly less. So we're going to see more and more. It's not going to go away. Vintage Wine Estates buys Firesteed Cellars. Vintage Wine Estates out of Santa Rosa, California, has purchased its first fine wine brand from Oregon, Firesteed Cellars of the Willamette Valley. Firesteed, which is a 50,000 case brand, is noted for its award-winning Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris, which is Oregon's signature variety of wines. The purchase comes on a diverse acquisition streak during the past 24 months, which includes numerous different wines. Napa Valley's Delectus Winery, Spencer Group Spirits, and most recently Cameron Hughes Wines. VWE Vintage Wines Estates has also acquired the distribution rights to Clay House Wines from Paso Robles and Washington State's Buried Cane, and from Argentina, Guggenheim Winery. So they have been reaching out and expanding and growing. I don't know their latest spot in the how big we are category. I haven't looked that up, but Vintage Wines Estates is stepping up and trying to create their own major portfolio. Nearly 4% of U.S. wine sales in 2016, which equals $2.33 billion, 4%, $2.33 billion, quite a bit of wine being, were not handled by traditional wholesale and retail channels, according to recent data from Ship Compliant and Wines. Instead, the wines were sold and delivered by wine producers directly to consumers. This represents an 18.5% growth compared to 2015. Direct to consumer, DTC. Vada's written about the DTC market and what's happening. FreeTheGrapes.org is big on that, but it's getting bigger. It's exploding. I keep on saying I need to get a hold of Bill at FreeTheGrapes.org. I just haven't done it yet. But FreeTheGrapes.org. Again, if you haven't subscribed to that on, you know, for e-letters, do so. Interesting stuff. But percent of all wine sales in 2016 were direct to consumers. That's a substantial increase over last year. And speaking of increases, top table wines, individual brands. I always like to, whenever I see this, to pass this on to you. Within wine and spirits markets, dark spirits, sparkling wines, and red blends are still leading in growth. The red blends are amazingly popular now, continuously to be amazingly popular. And, you know, I can't blame. Red blends are always good, but it's exploding on the market and has been. The let's see if I can. Here we go. Table wines had sales of more than $10 billion in U.S. multi-outlets and convenience stores for the 52 weeks ending at the end of May. That's a 3.6 increase over last year. Sparkling wines and champagnes generated sales of more than $1 billion, which is a 9.7% increase. And also the rise of red blends and consumers' fascination with bubbles. Cabernet Sauvignon, red blends, and Pinot Grigio have led the way, a category that continues to outperform the market is sparkling wine, both U.S. sparklers and ones from abroad, including Champagne, Cavas, and Proseccos. So always big. Top table wines in the United States, Barefoot, as always. I mean, that's almost double. The second one, Barefoot, case sales, these are 9-liter cases, which is 12 750 milliliter or 6 1.5 milliliter bottles, but 9-liter cases. Case sales, 10 million 99,980 cases for Barefoot this past year, well, ending May 14th. So, Sutter Home is second at 5,637,000, you know, half. The next is Franzia with 12 million, but their dollar sales are not quite as much as the other two, so they're down. Dollar sales for Barefoot, 672 million for Sutter Home, 369 million. Franzia, 340 million. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, $339 million in sales. Yellowtail, $267 million in sales. Kendall Jackson Vintners Reserve. Here, pour me a little bit more before you leave. Apothic is next at $185,878,000. Black Box is up there, $181 million. Chateau Saint Michel, $178 million. And Menage a Trois, $175 million. And the percentage change, this is interesting too. Barefoot jumped up 3.2, Sutter Home 2.9. Yellowtail dropped 2.5% over prior year. And the same with Kendall Jackson Reserve, 3.1 down. Apothic is up 23.6. Good wines. They're inexpensive, and they're reasonably priced, and they're really a reasonable wine, interesting wine. Black Box up 38.8% in sales. Catching on. People, again, the different closures. And I think that goes right back to what I was talking about earlier in the closures. 38.8% in sales of the Black Box. And it's nice. It's a good wine. It's, you know, for the price you're getting, I recommend it to people all the time. They say, what do you think about a box wine? Well, there's nothing wrong with a box wine. Same thing you're buying in the bottles, only you're getting a box and you're getting more in it. I recommend it particularly to people who are living by themselves or the spouse doesn't drink. And so you've got this box that will keep longer so you're not worrying about it going bad on you. And by the time you get around drinking it, it's still good at the end. So Black Box serves its purpose well. And obviously people are starting to catch on to it because, well, a 38.8% increase in sales, which, you know, is a substantial amount, actually. Here we go. Japanese scientists find a link between alcohol and aging. Oh, no. A study by a group of scientists from Japan's Kobe University have found that the more alcohol people drink, the faster they will age. Which, you know, I guess we can pretty much say we already knew that, but this is proven here. The study was presented at a scientific research meeting called Research Society on Alcoholism. It was held in Denver. And they found that alcoholic patients had shortened telomere lengths, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E, telomere lengths, make them susceptible to age-related diseases like cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, cancer, dementia. Telomeres are the protein caps on the ends of human chromosomes, and they're related to aging and overall health. So that's what they were checking. The study shows that alcoholic patients have shortened... The study shows that the alcoholic patients have a shortened telomere length, which means that heavy drinking causes biological aging at a cellular level. Telomeres is alcohol rather than acetaldehyde that is associated with a shortened telomere length. The result was revealed after Yamaki and his colleagues, and oh, by the way, Yamaki is the lead author on this. Narisha Yamaki is a clinical fellow at the Kobe University Graduate School of Medicine, so we'll give him his credit there. Yamaki and his colleagues studied 255 participants with a mix of alcoholic patients and age-matched controls of non-alcoholic between 41 and 85 years old. It found that an association between telomere shortening and thiamine deficiency, which science explains is responsible for neuron replacement, or I'm sorry, neuron impairments. Although how exactly thiamine deficiency can cause neural impairments is unclear, but it is well known that oxidation stress causes telomere shortening, and thus it is possible that oxidation stress may also cause neuron death. So there you go. They're saying that alcohol is going to cause your telomeres to be shortened and to be affected, and so therefore you can have a shorter life and be affected by all sorts of stuff. Oh, well, I won't comment. Well, I have to. I guess if you drink enough, you don't care. And that just might be what we need to do on that stuff. It's just, you know, oh, well. Let's see. Where are we now? Wrong one. Trying to maneuver my way around here and see if I can find what I wanted. Oh, here we go. 15 facts about wine. Now, these, you probably know some of these, and some of these are interesting, but if you don't, this is just, you know, just 15 nice little interesting things. This is from Forbes magazine. I don't know the date of this article. I don't have it here. Oh, originally written end of May, so it's a month old, almost 2 months old. Wow. This is just, here's some 15 facts about wine and taxes and stuff like that that you might know, you might not know, but either way, it's fun stuff. Number one, wine is about 8,000 years old. The exact beginnings are debated. Some people say it was first made in China, others in the Mesopotamia area, but historians tend to agree that it was really an accident why it was discovered. That's why it is thought to be from the gods. A natural product, a grape falls from a vine, and it, if left alone, it becomes wine. That's why I've said before, I think maybe the cavemen might have discovered wine. Picked some grapes that they found out there, threw it in a little indentation on the cave floor and left it alone, and it turned into wine, which it does. I mean, it's got its own yeast and its sugars right there, and there's usually a little bit of yeast on the grapes, and so that creates its own wine. But a product of the gods, because it was, you know, natural. Wouldn't be something you want to drink, though, when they made it itself, but still. Wine production and wine trade were an important part of life and commerce in the Mediterranean by the 3100 BC, but it wasn't consumed by the masses. Only royals and those in the church drank wine following the early production. Again, because it was a gift from the gods, they weren't allowed for the common man to drink it and had to stay with the church and the royals and all that. First known wine bottle dates back to 325 A.D. It was found in 1867 near a shipyard, near a vineyard. Where did I go? I lost my place here. Oh, here we go. I lost it. Hit a button here and the whole screen jumped. Near a vineyard in Speyer, Germany. It was inside one of two Roman stone sarcophaguses. The bottle is now on permanent display in a museum in Germany. Standard 750 bottle, milliliter bottle, is usually in most jurisdictions in the U.S., and they impose tax on it by the gallon, which a 750 milliliter bottle is actually 0.198129 of a gallon. So it's not much, but I have to know that because my taxes are based on that, and we have to do work on that. According to the Tax Foundation, Kentucky has the highest wine excise tax rate at $3.18 per gallon, followed by Alaska at $2.50. Florida is next at $2.25. Yes, it is. I can attest to that. Iowa at $1.75 and New Mexico at $1.70. The five states with the lowest wine excise tax rates are Louisiana at 11 cents, California at 20 cents, Texas also 20 cents, Wisconsin 25 cents, and Kansas and New York are tied at 30 cents. That really surprised me that Kansas is that low, as strict as they are on rules and regulation. We've talked about Utah being so high, and why isn't that in here? Well, this rankings do not include the states that have the states have control over all the sales of the alcohol, and Utah does basically with all their rules and regulations. So that's why Pennsylvania also is not in this. The growth of the wine industry exploded in Europe at the end of the Middle Ages. One reason, it was probably healthy. In 1400, the Black Plague claimed about half of the European population, and wine was considered safer to drink than water, not knowing that it wasn't the wine or the water, but the fleas that were causing that. Hundreds of years later, Louis Pasteur studied microorganisms and the effects on food and beverage and seemed to confirm this theory. He said, quote, wine can be considered with good reason as the most healthful and hygienic of all beverages. There you go. It's healthful. Thinking of which, I will take a sip of my healthful drink here. Thank you. All right. You're on top of that. I like that. Wine came to the Americas around the 16th century by force, this article says. Upon his arrival in Mexico, Spanish explorer Hernan Cortez ordered the planting of grapes, which was a widely successful endeavor. So why didn't the Mexican wine market explode? Because Cortez's edict made the acting king of Spain nervous. New plantings or vineyard replacements in Mexico were forbidden after 1595, forcing the country and many other countries around the world to depend solely upon Spanish imports. Huh. Champagne was invented in 1693. To be called champagne, sparkling wine has to be from the Champagne region of France. Okay. Other wines can be called sparkling wine, but not champagne, unless they meet the criteria. We know about that. We've talked about it. And, of course, different styles means that sparkling wine may also be taxed at varying rates from state to state. According to the Wine Institute, when you consider taxes, the most expensive state to grab some bubbly is Florida. Oh, boy. $3.50 per gallon, followed by Alaska at $2.50, Hawaii at $2.12, and Oklahoma at $2.08. $2.50 and $3.50, that's ridiculous, Florida. Oh, my gosh. As wine became more popular around the world, it became a revenue target. Of course it has. Look at Florida tearing us apart on their taxes, excise tax. In addition to tariffs and import duties, European countries look to finance infrastructure projects with the use of excise taxes. These excise taxes, which are imposed directly on the manufacturer, are easy to collect because the tax is built into the cost. According to a J.W. Gerritsen, who wrote The Control of Fuddle and Flash, A Sociological History of the Regulation of Alcohol and Opiates, a British tax official addressed the Brewers Society in 1897 saying, quote, through your agency, I am enabled to extract from the pockets of the people a sum of money and to do this without their knowing anything about it at all. which, yeah, because every bottle of wine you buy has got my tax built into it, as does everyone else's tax. He then followed up by questioning, where ignorance produces such bliss, do you think it's wise to enlighten? Oops, sorry, I just told you, so... But, yeah, it's excise taxes and everything. It's built into it on the wines. Back in 1862, President Lincoln signed the first income tax in the United States into law. The tax scheme wasn't terribly popular, so Congress slashed income tax rates in 1867, favoring excise taxes instead. So... income tax, you notice because you have to pay it. Excise tax, you don't notice it because the people who are selling you the stuff has to pay it. From 1868 to the modern tax income tax system was established in 1913, 90% of all federal revenue came from taxes on liquor, beer, wine, and tobacco. From 1868 to 1913, 90% liquor, beer, wine, and tobacco. See these old movies, and the cowboy walks into the bar and he says, give me whiskey, and he throws a coin on there. Well, that coin's probably a lot more than it should be because of the taxes. But it's still cheaper to drink wines from France and Italy than California because of the relatively high cost of railroad travel. Higher tariffs instituted in the late 19th century plus advances in transportation changed that. The prices in California went down simply because you can get it to you faster. And the tariffs, of course. In 1919, the United States passed the Volstead Act, better known as Prohibition. The act prohibited the manufacture, transportation, and sale of intoxicating beverages, which included wine. Prohibition crushed the American wine industry. Before 1919, more than 2,500 wineries were licensed to make wine in the United States. But by 1933, there were less than 100. You have to say, oh, wow, on that. Oh, wow. And wait a minute. This has a little blue. Let me click and see what that says here. I've got to go on to that. Complete map of California wine history from 1800 to today. Well, that's interesting. Boy, that's a lot there, too. That's a book. Gee. Oh, well, I had to see what that said. I'll have to read that at some time. On March 22, 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt signed the Cullen-Harrison Act. That is an act to provide revenue by the taxation of certain non-intoxicating liquor and for other purposes, whatever that means. He signed that into law, which moved the U.S. away from prohibition by allowing the manufacturer to sell beer and some wines. So beer is certain non-intoxicating liquor. The Cullen-Harrison Act was nixed after prohibition was officially repealed on December 5th, 1933. So from March 22nd to December 5th, you can sell some wines. But by then, so many of them closed down. After the repeal of prohibition, lawmakers saw a chance to again raise revenue by taxing alcohol, so they did. In 1934, the excise tax on alcohol was $2 per gallon. By 1970, it was $10.50 per gallon. And if you merely adjusted for inflation, it would have been only $5.79 a gallon. So it was actually raised up substantially. By 2015, the U.S. government collected $1.073 billion in excise taxes on domestic and imported wine alone. Jeez. According to a 2016 Gallup poll, 32% of Americans who drink alcohol say they prefer wine, although that is below beer drinkers at 46%. Total U.S. wine sales, including imports, approached $60 billion in 2016, the 24th consecutive year for growth of U.S. wine sales. And I'm sure that was, 2016? I'm sure 2017 will surpass that yet again. With 1.545 wine-related businesses per 10,000 residents, Portland, Oregon is the most favorable U.S. city for wine lovers. It probably helps also that Oregon has no state sales tax. Neither does Florida, by the way. San Francisco ranks second, considered the wine production capital of the U.S. California boosts three cities. Sacramento, San Jose, round out the other two on the list. According to the Wine Institute, the wine industry in California accounts for $15.2 billion in taxes each year, including annual, local, state, and federal business, excise taxes, and personal taxes. Wow. And in 15, the most expensive bottle of wine was reportedly a 1992 Screaming Eagle Cabernet, which sold at a 2000 Napa Valley charity auction for $500,000, or $500,000. Despite the fact that it was highly reviewed, it's assumed that the actual value of the wine was less and that the bump was because of the auction. That's good news for the buyers, since donors who purchase items at a charity auction may claim a charitable contribution deduction only to the extent that the purchase price exceeds its fair market value. So, for example, if a wine was worth $400,000, the value of the deduction would be $100,000, or $500,000 price paid less the $400,000. Since its purchase price of $500,000 was an estimated 34 glasses of wine in the 6-liter bottle. A 6-liter bottle. Okay, that was a magnum. You know. That works out to about $14,705 per glass. I'll tell you what, the one I'm drinking tonight is definitely cheaper than that. So there's just a little bit of interesting stuff on wine and taxes and all that stuff. I guess the end of May thing put it closer to the tax day. Boy, I can't think of the word. I'm trying to think. I had a blank there. Okay, let's see. Is there something else I want to know? It's not that. No. Something. What was it? Let me find my note here. I had a note of one thing that I definitely wanted to mention. Where is my note? There. No. No. Well. Oh, well. Well. Oh, there it is. Let me look at this one here. I had a Now, this is something I told you I had a little bit of bad news for, and I'll end up with this little bit of bad news for women here. Headline says, drinking half a glass of wine every day increases breast cancer risk. Oh, no. New research suggests that as little as one alcoholic drink per day can increase the risk of breast cancer. This was reported by World Cancer Research Fund and the American Institute for Cancer Research. Found that a half a glass of wine or a small beer on a daily basis significantly increased the risk of both pre- and post-menopausal women. So sipping an average of 10 grams of alcohol every day is associated with a 5% increased breast cancer risk in pre-menopausal women and 9% increase in post-menopausal women. That's standard drink is 14 grams, and this is just 5 grams. So this is saying that actually no level of alcohol is safe when it comes to terms of breast cancer. Research studied 119 studies encompassing data on 12 million women from around the world to come up with this report. Premenopausal women who were the most active had a 17% lower risk of developing breast cancer compared to the least active, while postmenopausal women had a 10% decreased risk. So, you know, It says the report also linked non-starchy vegetables, dairy, diets high in calcium, and food containing carotenoids such as carrots and kale to lowering the risk of some breast cancers. It says that women did 30 minutes of exercise per day, they could eliminate the risk of breast cancer by 50%. So the point being, out of all this, sure, you might be able to increase your risk of breast cancer with a drink a day, but you can also offset that tremendously by doing 30 minutes of exercise a day. And I saw something the other day. 30 minutes of exercise is what? Just 2.5% of a day. That's all it is. 30 minutes is 2.5% of a time of a day. So, you know, 2.5%, really not much, and the benefits of it. So, drink wine, exercise, yep. Be healthy, and tune into us next week.
Yeah, I just, you know, whenever I hear these studies and stuff, I always have to question, you know, the validity and what they're trying to say. If you don't exercise and you never took or drank alcohol or anything, and you just laid around on the couch all day long, there's a good chance that you're going to get one of these diseases and things like that. And
exactly,
you know, they're trying to make the connection that it's alcohol though, because you know we survey 12 million. But coming up with a study like that, but if you exercise for, you know, 30 minutes, that'll reduce it. Well, it's going to reduce it anyway. I mean, you
That's
have
right.
a less,
yeah.
less chance of it anyway, whether you're drinking alcohol or not. I don't get it. It's just sometimes I just hear the surveys and I'm like, okay, good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And why approach it with the alcohol theme there too? And that's just something that I always wonder. And I've quoted a lot of these studies and you know, they start approaching it with the alcohol. If you drink wine, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But,
yep.
Well, you know, just go right to the butt and, you know, don't try to tie it into the wine, you know. So
the study showed if you go biking for 20 miles a day, it'll reduce the chances. You know, well, yeah, if you bike 20 miles a day, it's going to reduce a whole lot of stuff. I mean,
that's right.
Next week it'll be
a lot for you. Yeah,
next week it'll be dairy products. It'll be, you know, if you eat cereal on certain days, you can get this. You know, it's just going to be – it'll change. And we've heard this all the time with red wine. Red wine, one week it's not good for you, and then the next study, it's good for you. So I don't know. They just
and I read this article earlier to my engineer here. And she goes, she says, and then next week they'll change that. And that's just what you said. I
exactly.
mean, the same thing.
Exactly.
Next week they'll change it, you know.
Yep. They'll say, it's good for you. Drink up.
Or instead of the study from Britain, it'll be a study from Singapore. And they'll say, you need to drink lots more wine. You know, and it just.
You got to tell them. You never know.
You never know. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You're not exercising.
Yeah.
So,
it's going to have an effect on you anyway.
It is. It is, you know, one way or the other.
Anyway, I didn't see any events at the winery this weekend.
Or next.
The 29th. Taking a summer.
You know,
wow.
Yeah, it's summer. And, you know, it's just the rains. We're getting such an odd rain pattern this year. It's just...
Mm-hmm.
Everybody I've talked to is saying, this isn't right. You know, we're supposed to have a beautiful day up to about 3 o'clock, and then the rain starts in the middle of the state, and it moves toward the coast, and it rains for a half hour at about 6-7 in the evening, and we're done until the next morning. It's not this year. It's just like anytime,
strange.
Every time, everywhere. You know,
I was watching the news this morning. It was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 a.m., and they said, people in Manatee County or some county along the West Coast, they're getting lightning and thunderstorms. I said, really? This time of the morning?
I know. You know, that's the way it's going this year. The rains are starting out in the Gulf, and they're moving in toward us and moving across the state. You know, it mm-hmm. doesn't work that way. I mean, somebody needs yeah. to let this weather pattern know that this isn't the way it works, you know.
Right. Somebody new. Somebody must be new in the
new.
Department that's doing it. Yep.
There you go. That's what's wrong. We got a new weather person up there that's controlling these clouds and stuff, and he just doesn't understand that that's not the way it works
absolutely.
In Florida.
That's right.
But maybe he'll get it together. And, yeah. We can only hope.
By September and November, October,
yeah.
it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. Then the season will be over.
You know what? It's almost August. Next week, our next show is going to be August the 3rd. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's here. I mean, you know.
Wow. Just moving right along. 8 months already into 2017. So we'll see everybody next week on August the 3rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to tune in. And thank you for tuning in. And have a great week. And, gosh, enjoy your hamburgers and wine tomorrow. And
that's right. And Cheesecake Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be great. Yeah, that's going to be fantastic. Have a good one, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks.
Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks. See you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.